Submitted for your approval. Submitted for your approval.
Another dimension.
It's a light for your approval.
Another dimension.
It's a light for your
shadow. Another dimension.
It's a light for your
shadow. Another dimension.
Self.
It's a light
for your shadow.
Another twilight zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The twilight zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The twilight zone.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to a podcast not only of sound, but also of mind. It's Time to Rewind is a podcast that takes a journey into the wondrous land of time loops whose boundaries are that of imagination. Each episode, my guests and I explore these time loops, one loop at a time. This stop is Trapped in the Twilight Zone, and this is my fourth and final stop at 1961's Season 2, Episode 26, Shadow Play. Here with me once again is my guest Austin Pryor from Malkovich Malkovich Minute Minute. How are you doing today?
I'm doing real good. Good to be back.
Yeah, so in this episode, we are talking about the second iteration of this dream, which is really just the last 2 minutes of the episode. And all the roles have changed. And I did bring them up in my episode with Alice, but I did recognize one more person this time around. And this time I noticed that the priest is the district attorney.
Yes.
And also, just to go over the other ones, his jailmate from across the hall is now the judge. The crazy guy talking about his mother is now his defense lawyer, and the
yes,
and the press editor is now the jury foreman.
Yeah. So it's a good effect. Like you were saying with Alice, that like it's not really how it works, but I think I think they are going for this. The feeling of jumbled up identity that is true to dreams. It's not as like codified as this in dreams, really, where
it's not typically cut and dry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
but yeah, I do think that this is a good, I like to use the term narrative shorthand.
Yes, it is. It's a good device because it's based on the fact that, you know, just in television watching over the course of an episode, you become familiar with the faces and voices, and now you can jumble them up. You can play with the audience's expectations and what you've the information you've given to the audience. And I think it's just, yeah, it's really simple and clever, and I think it's a great device. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that this is basically one of the shortest and easiest ways for them to signify, you know, the more surreal nature of a dream in the course of just 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, there is just something fundamentally unfilmable about dreams. You know, if you film something, you've got to decide where it's happening. And in a dream, that's not true. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can have a really strong sense of place in a dream. And sometimes that's what a dream is all about. It's just walking around some place that you remember from your childhood, except it was kind of my school, but it was kind of not my school, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you can have a conversation with somebody in a dream where the background is just kind of, you know, meaningless. But if you show somebody in that context in a movie, it has a different meaning because you're saying that it's happening in some kind of liminal magical space, whereas your dream might simply neglect to mention or to present any kind of space. But that doesn't mean it happens in some in some supernatural space, you know, whereas in the language of TV and movies, if you show something happening and it's not happening in any particular place, well, you either have to go incredibly tight in on people's faces, or you have to just give, I don't know, blur the background, or give, you know, you have to kind of make some choice that really draws attention to the fact that there is no background, whereas the whole idea of that moment in the dream is the exact opposite. It's that no attention is being given to the background, and it's just the conversation you're having with this loved one or this person or whoever it is in your life. And there's a million and one little features like that to dream that make them that would confound the would-be adapter of dreams to film. And this, so everybody who comes to do that just has to make certain choices about how time works, how location works. And you can have something like, you know, Inception, which is like great fun and I enjoy it, and great production, but is like nothing to do with how dreams work at all. It's just like, this is way
Inception
too
Inception is more
way
like
too
a,
real.
A narrative structure. And then I think the other way to go is to add these more surreal elements. I think,
yeah,
like what they do in like the Big Lebowski dream sequence.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
In Twin Peaks, like with the backwards talking kind of thing. Just add these completely bizarre, surreal elements to help signify that it's a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just what they'll do, like when the colonel in, is it Bobby's dad? No, I'm forgetting all the names now in Twin Peaks. The colonel.
Yeah, you're not going to get any help from me because my entire experience with Twin Peaks and especially the dream sequence is the fact that it was parodied in The Simpsons. Like, better Burns suit. Burns suit.
yeah, but just like I remember the colonel, you know, Air Force guy is talking about, I had a vision last night, you know, as distinct from a dream. And it cuts to showing the, and it sometimes it's just like, it's just a symbol, you know, burning on the screen, and then it'll just be like, you know, an owl up close, and images and dreams can be like that, you know, have that just an image followed by another image, and then just, you know, kind of stream of consciousness. And that's a great way to do it as well. But they never, movies can get some aspects of dreams, but you'll never be able to show somebody's dream, you know, in any kind of, you can't take a given dream and faithfully adapt it to movies or TV. Another dream that really strikes me really sticks out is, do you remember Father Damien's dream in The Exorcist, where he's running and his mother is in like in the city streets, and it's completely silent for parts of it, and he's shouting, but you can't hear anything. And then there's like an image of a clock, and it's so well done, and it's so spooky. And again, it's not, you know, it's not perfect, but it evokes an atmosphere that you can get in dreams. And it's just, it's well worth a look if you want to explore dreams and think about how they're adapted and everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff out there. I actually don't remember that. I think it's just been too long since I've seen The Exorcist, and I've only seen it once.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's a good one.
Yeah. I honestly don't really have too much else. I guess I think this might be a good point, because I did do just a little bit more research about people and their dreams and dreaming in black and white and color.
I was dying to jump in on this. Yeah.
I actually found a study that was published in 2008, and in that study it showed that people 25 and younger almost never dream in black and white, while people 55 and older dream in black and white about a quarter of the time. And across their entire study, about 12% of the people dream only in black and white.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
And it also referenced, and whenever they did a similar study back in the 40s, it showed almost the opposite, where 75% of Americans that they studied either rarely or never had any color in their dreams, and they dreamed entirely in black and white.
That is wild. It's wild because I've heard of references to dreaming in black and white, and I don't think I've ever dreamt in black and white. I definitely have dreams where the color is less vivid and the color feels kind of washed out. And it does. I wonder if it relates to the way our eyes work and the way, you know, in low light, we can't see color because we have the rods and cones, the light receptors in our retina, mean that we pick up most of our visual information in black and white, and then color is kind of a bonus that's added, you know. And that's the way, you know, video compression has always worked, even in the old analog days. You know, you just give less bandwidth over to describing the color, and as long as there's a good detailed, good solid luma signal, the black and white part of the signal, you'll get a good image, you know, because your brain just kind of fills in the color details. And did your research turn up anything about like the reasons that we dream in black and white?
I mean, they did have a mention, a reference that, you know, they think that it does have to do with television. And, you know, the older people, they primarily watched black and white television whenever they were younger. But honestly, I think that also has to do with I think it does have to do with television and movies in general, but also just how society has viewed entertainment and imagination across mm-hmm. the years. Like, because we have stories about dreams, so we know people dreamed before TV and movies existed,
of course. Yeah,
and because there's references to dreams like in Shakespeare's writing and and in other novels. And at that time, you know, they would get their entertainment from, you know, plays and novels and oral stories.
Yeah, but I think that campfires and
But I think that it was a smaller portion of their life is devoted to imagination. And I think in society now,
I don't know about that. I mean, I think like the amount of imagination in somebody's life, I suppose, is largely tied to how much or how little toiling they have to do, and how, you know, so I suppose it would be rich people would have, you know, more time for imagination and don't need to go through the daily grind as much. But I think, like, you know, we are such storytellers, it is so deep within us, you know. And I think of, especially in Ireland, the amount of folklore, the amount of stories we have that we're told around campfires, and we're, you know, it's so fundamental to who we are, that I think, like, I think dreams and imagination and stories are just like, they're definitely, in my experience, influenced by, you know, movies and TV, because I've watched so much over the years. But they come first, you know.
Yeah, and I think it also has to do with like the level of mental stimulation, because like an oral, I didn't do any research, so I'm just, you know, talking out of my ass here, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is correct, that being told a story orally, I imagine it creates a certain amount of stimulation. Reading a story in a novel, I wouldn't be surprised if that created more stimulation in your brain, although that one compared to oral, that might be, it's possible that the oral gives more stimulation than reading on the page. That one I'm not sure about, but like listening to like a radio play with sound effects, I think that would create more mental stimulation than the other forms of entertainment. And watching a TV show or a movie creates even more mental stimulation. So even if you have the same amount of time in your day devoted to entertainment as someone in the past, the fact that you're getting, you know, much more mental stimulation, I think that translates into people's dreams.
Yeah. And we use our technology of, you know, photography and sound recording and all of that we're using technological shortcuts to producing images. You know what I mean? So we can produce these amazing images that really burn their way into our minds and make it have this huge influence on us.
And so that I think that the added stimulation in basically the, like, the imagination center or the entertainment center in our brain that creates,
yeah,
that I think that that develops that part of our brain more. And so whenever we dream, that that part is still more active and more developed. And so we're getting more sophisticated dreams.
Yeah. 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 Oh, fascinating stuff. Yeah. And all from only a few seconds of film.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I thought that was a good time to bring that up because I don't really have anything else about these two specific minutes. Oh, you did mention, I didn't talk about it before because it wasn't in the version that I watched, but there is an ad.
Yeah, so after Serling has done his piece to his closing kind of narration, he keeps going and he's they go, now a word from our sponsor, and then just, you know, the card comes up, the Twilight Zone, and then he comes back and he's saying it's more casual and he's talking to the audience, he's addressing, you know, looking in the camera, well, he's just kind of chatting away, and he says it's not just a word from our sponsors, it's just a great recommendation. And then he holds up a pack of Oasis brand cigarettes. Smoke Oasis for that cool, clean flavor. And it is just, it's so of its time. It's so funny to see and to hear. And he's just, just shameless, you know. And the fact that it's cigarettes, and that is something that, you know, The Simpsons has done so much over the years, you know, Laramie and Not Till You're 12, Fallout Boy, you know. Yeah, it's just what a different world it was. And, you know, and of course, part of Serling's shtick is that he smokes on camera when he's doing his intros and outros and stuff. I noticed he wasn't smoking in the courtroom, which is probably just out of respect for the institution in the opening. But yeah, so I'm dying to just delve in, and I'm glad that they preserved all that in the in the remastered version on the Blu-ray. But it actually just made me think, I just want to watch this with ad breaks and all, you know. I want to see the ads at the time, because, like, I know that, like, watching it, the further you go back, the harder it is to separate the show from the advertising, because it used to be much more integrated, you know. There'd be like, I've listened to these old suspense recordings of old radio broadcasts, you know, and Suspense brought to you by Autolite Spark Plugs, and ask for Autolite Spark Plugs by name, and then you just, like, you've heard Autolite Spark Plugs about 16 times by the time you've heard it, but you wouldn't know where to really cut it in or out, because it's kind of it's a spot, but it's still part of the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that that style of advertising is making a bit of a resurgence in terms, yes, of, like, professional podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It is that. It's like reading copy into the podcast, and
of podcasts, it's not even just reading copy, but especially with, like, the more comedic podcasts.
Yes.
It'll be like, you know, insert your, you know, talk, spend this amount of time talking about our product, however you want to. And then, you know, they end up turning, they integrate the sponsorship into their show and make it a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm fascinated by it, but it does make me queasy a lot of the usually, you know. I'm never really comfortable with it, you know. I think unless the product is just kind of you know, immaculately ethical, I feel really queasy about the whole thing. I fully recognize that everybody has different standards about what they will and won't advertise, and you know, I'm not trying to monetize my podcast, so it's not a choice I've had to face. But I definitely And I think there's maybe it's a cultural divide along the Atlantic as well, that we, that I think the US culture is just a bit more comfortable with integrating, you know, the advertising with the material. And it makes us a bit queasy.
Yeah. And it's actually something that I've considered, because I recently, you know, starting this podcast, I started using Anchor as a podcast hosting service, and they allow, you know, advertising at any size audience. And, you know, I have a very tiny audience right now, and I have considered, you know, seeing if adding that, you know, would net me, you know, a couple cents per episode or something like that, but just as something to start doing it and seeing what that actually entails, because they do offer that.
Yeah, and it's tempting, and I've you know, I've thought about it, and I want to make a career in voiceover, or do I? And if I get into that, and, you know, I'm doing a bit of voice acting now and again, and so, you know, what I'd most like to be doing in that space is kind of voice acting, especially like cartoon voices and stuff. But, you know, to pay the bills, I'm asking myself what I would and wouldn't advertise. But of course, if it's on a podcast and you're the host and you're the personality, the advertising becomes much more of an endorsement, mm-hmm. because it's your personality and you're saying, I'm now advertising this product, and here's the product, and here's the bit. Whereas if you're hired to do an ad, that's just a job of work. It's an acting job. Yeah. And I feel I'd have a much higher standard of what I'd endorse than what I would advertise, in the sense of being a jobbing actor. You know what I mean? And so, this is all just kind of... it's a dilemma I would love to be facing. I'd love to have all these offers coming in and go, well, what does my conscience tell me? But it's completely academic at the moment, because I haven't built up to any of that kind of level, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, it's been great talking with you, but I'm excited to jump into the 1985 version of this.
Yeah, let's keep it going.
So why don't you go ahead and remind everybody where they can find you online?
Visit MalkovichMinute.net. You'll find the link for all the major social platforms like Matrix and Mastodon. And I think maybe there's something for like, what's that one? Meta, Facebook, something. Yeah, you'll find that stuff too. And
I've already forgotten what Trump's new platform. Yeah.
It is just Mastodon. They just stole the source code for Mastodon and pretended like they got caught stealing. You know, it was like absolutely, absolutely disgraceful. But Mastodon is a lot of fun. It's kind of a federated, you know, interoperable. Anybody sets up their own. It's like you're setting up your own Twitter server that is compatible with all these other Twitter servers, except for Twitter. So if we can get the anti-competitive laws, anti-monopoly laws in the US to actually work the way they're supposed to, we could force Twitter to interoperate with the other platforms and stuff. And that would be a really healthy change for the internet. So that's just that little mini rant over there.
All right, and as always, I'm Bubba Wheat, and you can find me at flightsdiceandmovienights.com. You can find me on Twitter at Bubba Wheat. You can find this show, It's Time to Rewind, on anchor.fm, as well as anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. We also have a Facebook group, It's Time to Rewind, a time loop group, where you can join and discuss episodes as they come out, as well as any discussions or memes about time loops in general. And until next time, I will still be right here, trapped in the Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
Another dimension.
It's light.
For your approval.
Another dimension.
It's light.
For your shadow.
Another dimension.
It's light.
For your shadow.
Another dimension.
Self.
It's light.
For your shadow.
Another Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The Twilight Zone.
But it isn't prison that scares him, the long silent nights of waiting, the slow walk to the little room. or even death itself. It's something else that holds Adam Grant in the hot, sweaty grip of fear. Something worse than any punishment this world has to offer. Something found only in the Twilight Zone.